Let's have an AA meeting. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stephanie, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi. Welcome to the Monday night Blue Chip Speakers meeting at the NAVA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they established their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-serving accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight, listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight's speaker is Richard.
Hey, everybody. Mon nom est Richard Pierre Kozik. Je suis breton. Mon père est Pierre Kozik. Et ma mère est Jeanne Sterbinou. Et nous sommes bretons. Et je suis un alcoolique reconnaissant. Yeah. My name is Richard, and I'm a grateful alcoholic. That was the last few words in French that I said. And I took this opportunity right from the jump to introduce you to my higher power. My mother and father, they're not here in the rooms. They're not here on earth. But as it turns out, they're right where I need them. So, my story has a bit of a fairy tale to it. And like all fairy tales, it gets a little dark. Just a heads up. So once upon a time, not so very long ago, two young people found themselves in the midst of another world war, found each other. How, they don't know. I never got the chance to ask them. One of the many things I regret. But they did. And as all the best stories go, boy meets girl, you know, it's all cute. And lo and behold, they had the same crazy, magical dream. And they did not want to pursue a life that their forefathers had done for generations, farming, and which wasn't a terribly hard decision to make, because Europe at the end of the war was a mess. And they thought, well, if we're going to start a new life from scratch, let's cross the big pond, so to speak. And they landed in New York, and my brother Charles and I are the manifestation of a dream come true. And I knew that from an early age. It wasn't spoken to us. Those years when they were growing up as teenagers, this was not stuff you talk about. You want to forget those kind of things. But there was a lot of love. My parents were very affectionate in front of us. I got to see that. And then as I got older, I realized how lucky I was, because a lot of people don't have that, if they have a mother and father at all. So, first vivid memory I have as a 3-year-old was waiting with my uncle and aunt in our apartment on the 5th floor of a tenement walk-up, steam through cast iron pipes, and I was so excited, I'm getting jumpy just telling you about it, because I was waiting for my mom to come home with my baby brother. I didn't know it was baby brother, because back in those days, we weren't goofy with that kind of, you know, gender reveal or whatever you kids call it today, you know. It was old school. People were just happy that all the toes and fingers were there and worked. You know, everything else was gravy. And I can remember the keys jingling in the lock. And they had to pry me away from that little baby. I was so happy because they explained to me what a big brother was. And I'm going, okay, that sounds good. I'm 3 years old, I don't know. But I'm excited. I'm excited because I'm not alone anymore. Not that I felt loneliness, you know. I lived in a building filled with all kinds of people. And it was a village of sorts that my parents left behind. Except there were no cows and chickens, and it was 5 stories straight up. But it was a village. We all took care of each other. Everybody was everybody's parent. Every child was everybody's child. It was a wonderful environment. And then we moved to the Bronx. And then my life really took off. So I'm 6 years old. I say this only to make myself laugh. So I meet my first group of savages, 5, 6, 7-year-olds just like me. They look like me. Some are dirtier, some are cleaner. And of course, as all children do, hey, what's your name? Now, I said, Dickie. And you would not believe the hysteria. See, I don't appreciate that man right there. These kids were rolling on the ground. And I'm like, huh? I guess it's funny. Huh? What? And then a boy, of course it would be a boy. Yes, yes, OB. He says, don't you know what's so funny? I go, nah, because nobody laughed at me back in Manhattan where I grew up. For the first 6 years, he says, Dickie, that's where your Willie is. I don't know Willie from, you know, Heather James. I still don't know what he's talking about, right? Because that wasn't the word that was used in my house. So now a girl of 6 comes up to me, right? Yeah, as if it wasn't bad enough that a boy. And she explains, you know, and she's making, I'm like, and then, click, God. Oh, my God. I ran up those 5 flights, crying like a baby. My mother's going, what's the matter? Did somebody touch you? I go, no. Well, what's the matter? I'm a Willie. Now, my mother, she's right off the boat, right? She only knew a few words to get around the neighborhood. She don't know what Willie is. Now, I have to describe to my mother the situation. And what does she do? She didn't mean to. I hope not. I never asked her. It was too, even years later, it was too humiliating. She laughed her ass off. So, in a goofy way, laughter came to mean a lot to me. It was a way to grease things, to smooth things out with strangers or even good friends. They could always count on a laugh from old Dirty Pierre, that's what they called me in school. Because they never met a French kid before. They didn't know what to call me. And that was fine by me. So life was good. Both of my parents and myself, we learned English together. They would buy me, nursery books, picture books with the sounds of the letters drawn out. Because in kindergarten, my teacher said to me, when you go home today, you tell Mommy and Daddy they can't speak French anymore in the house. Because this is what I spoke when I went to the school. And I just picked up what I heard in class. I learned my teacher's name. So, this is kind of odd, but in retrospect, it was just another bonding that made our family all the more special. And I was good at school. I loved school. I loved learning. I liked being around people, even at a young age. One of the first things I remember is my mom telling a group of her friends when they would throw these soirees. And I knew that they were good friends because they had to climb 5 flights of stairs if they wanted to party down with my parents. Now, these were people that were from the old world, old school. But they didn't shut me and my brother up in a room with some cookies or one of those looks. Don't make no noise. No, we were allowed to come and go. Not to be clowns, but yeah. And she would love to tell people, he loves people. Strangers, children, grown-ups, everybody. And I thought, yeah, I do. Why wouldn't I? So, school was fun. Got to school, 12 years. I won't get into that. But everything you've heard is all that and more. As I soon found out. Why? Because, it was understood. It was understood. I'm sending my kids to school. If he acts up, you do whatever's necessary. Unfortunately, and I think some parents knew, but either they didn't care or that kid was so wild, he probably deserved it. I wasn't wild. But I got slapped, pointed with pencils to where my skin bled. My knuckles were wrapped, I can't tell you how many times, with leather straps. But still, education, phenomenal. And then, to my amazement, and the horror didn't come till much later, thankfully. So up until the fourth grade, it was girls and boys. But from the fifth grade through the eighth, and then I went to a boys' high school. From the fifth grade to the sixth grade, 2 full years, my homeroom teacher sexually abused me. And as I say, I knew it was very odd, very strange, shocking, but he was kind of what saved me. A lot of my other friends that I'm growing up with, these children, we're growing up together, we're learning together, we're playing together, they too were touched by this guy. So now I've got a secret, a very strange one. I thought at one time I could confide it to my parents, but that time never came. So sixth grade comes and goes, and I get a little reprieve, and I'm fine. But it's always in the back of my mind, what an odd thing. But now, as time goes by, I'm learning more about myself, right? Biology, sex ed, girls, guys. And then I understand a little bit of the sickness. But I didn't know what to do, so I just did what he told me to do. So I got a little bit of a reprieve from that guy. And I don't mean to mention his name. So seventh grade rolls around, and one of the many gifts my father gave, not just to me, to my mother, and my brother and I. He worked a lot. He was just a waiter for many years. And then the last 2 years of his life, he was a head waiter at one of the most, still is, luxe, prestigious hotels on the planet. It's called the Carlisle Hotel. And he would take us the little time he would cobble together for vacation. And we didn't really care where it was. I think my mother felt the same way. We were just happy to have him for like 10 days, all four of us. It was magical, magical. And they could be lovey-dovey, and my brother and I could run wild wherever we were. And my mom would cook whatever my dad wanted, and whatever he wanted he got because he was on vacation. It was just pure joy. And then he took us to Montauk, which is in Long Island. Some of you, if you've ever seen the movie Jaws, it was modeled after that town. And my father had a habit, which my mother let him have, because she knew how important it was for my dad to have some space, and he could be just a dude, just a man, for like 15, 20 minutes. And he would almost always do this when we went to the beach, which we went to a lot, Montauk, no surprise. But he would go off, and he would always come back, and he'd be wet. He took a little swim for himself. Probably walked up and down the beach a little bit, looking at the ladies, because he's a good-looking guy. This is all stuff I tell myself, right? To make him even bigger than he needed to be. And he was big, big. And my mother and my brother and I would wait for him. And he always came back, 15, 20 minutes. And the food would be ready for him. And it was just magical. But even at that young age, I saw how men and women should be, could be, irrespective of the fact that their parents, they were people in front of my brother and I, which you don't see, you just don't see. But in Montauk, he was late. So my mother sent me and my brother off to get him. And there was a crowd on the beach. And we had seen crowds like this before. So it wasn't unusual. And my father always told us, there's only two reasons why people on the beach having fun are going to gather like that. Something from the water, you know, some sort of fish or crab or something, has washed up. And people probably haven't seen that before, and they want to check it out. Or somebody got into some trouble in the water. So my brother and I are just standing there with the crowd, and I can hear a voice. I couldn't tell if it was a man or woman, because it was too far away. Anyway, long story short, what seemed like hours, and I'm watching these lifeguards, young men and young women, every piece of equipment you could possibly imagine, going in, coming back out. There was a horrific riptide. And even though my father taught me how to swim, it was him that they dragged onto the beach. So that was the end of my life. And I knew it. I knew it. I exploded into a million pieces, and then I melted back into something. So, four of us went on vacation, and as a family, three of us went back home as individual wounded people. She was still my mother, he was still my brother, but we were transformed. And we never spoke of it again. What's to talk about? Anyway, I'm not going to make the same mistake that I made last year. It took me 17 years to tell my story last year. See the way I segue there, and even now, you know, the feels get to me. And I spent too much time telling the front of the story, but I'm going to get to what's really important in my story. So my sobriety date is October the 10th, 2004. It was my second attempt at AA, and I came to realize that the first time, 12 years earlier, was a gift as well. And I've since understood that I've always had gifts in my life. I just didn't know it. My parents, of course, that's obvious. My baby brother, who was my best friend. And when we got home, you're going to have to do you. And I had a rough time of it. Every adult that knew me or didn't know me put their hands on me because I'm acting up. And I got to be a man now. I got to be the man of the house. Well, that's crazy. We just buried that in the ground. You got to be a big brother. Well, I've always been a... What the F are these people telling me? And they're laying their hands on me. And I got rage in me. And I didn't know I had that in me. But I didn't do anything about that because it scares the bejesus out of me. It still does. Because the few times I've let it out, I've hurt people. So, drinking, yeah. 12 years old. But I was sniffing airplane glue because I like to build models. What a coinkydink, right? All the glue I could handle. And my cute little brown candy paper bag, right? A little tissue. There used to be this thing. It was a industrial strength cleaner. It's called Carbona. For you old fogies out there, you could clean. If you had white shoes, it would turn a black shoe white. So you throw that in some tissue and you sniff that. Oh my God. Didn't like that. Didn't like the fumes. Beer? Yeah. To be honest, the first beer I had to share it with, I can't remember the number, six or eight mooks just like me on the top of the stairwell in my building. It was always my effing building. Yeah. God forbid we should choose one of their buildings or their back porches. The hoity-toity friends I had that had real homes, I thought they were better than me. But it was always mine. And so my first real taste of alcohol was pretty much 80% of a fifth of a nasty, nasty Cutty Sark. I don't even know if they make that stuff. And I drank it in 40 minutes. And my friends, because they had my back, also they were scared shitless that I was going to die out there. And somebody was going to find out that, oh, weren't you with them? And they dragged my ass through the streets up five flights, rang my doorbell, banged on the door, and as soon as the door cracked open, they ran up across the roof, and I fell into the arms of my mother, screaming. And, yeah. So, fast forward, my 20s, you know, I'm running through life because I'm full of juice, you know? This is what young people do, right? That's what life is all about. Taste everything, do everything. Drink, smoke. I'm going to try and watch my language. Because I don't really have to talk that way to get across my story. Although it helps at times. So I'm running, like my good friend says, crazy train, right? Ozzy, love the man. And I'm going through people, places, and things like there's no tomorrow. And I don't care. I don't care what day it is, what time it is, happy, sad, birthdays, funerals, weddings, promotions, I got laid off. I just like to get high. I didn't need a reason. If I woke up, here we go. That's all I needed. But, yeah, there were people involved too. And I had a dysfunctional relationship with women. I didn't know. And I don't blame my parents. I don't know if they ever would have. Or my dad. My mother was, that's not a mother's job. From where they came from, that's the man's job. I'm sure he would have told me something about cows and bulls. You know, that's what he grew up with. I can't imagine what his dad gave him as far as the birds and the bees. But anyway, I didn't get that. I kind of learned as I went along. I think a lot of us do. Again, it was a different time back then. I'm going to be 69 years old, y'all, in February. So I was out there just being me. You know, trying to be the best me I knew how, right? I got some direction here, and it went here, and then it went there. Why? Because I somehow picked up the notion that no matter what is told to me, whether it's a professional teacher or professor, a girlfriend that I say I love, I was a serial monogamist. Every new girl, she's the one, you know. And, but I'm going to do it, whatever it is, whatever the learning that I need to learn, I'm going to do it my way. Because that's how I really felt I'm going to learn anything about life. What I left on the beach and in the fifth and sixth grade, that ain't going to happen to me no more. Life is not going to catch me off guard anymore. All right. And then another goofy thing I started to do, I started to adopt all these personas. And one of the personas was a stoner athlete. So the result of that, although it was my father's favorite sport, racing, bicycles, Tour de France, that old European shtick. So, you know, of course I'm going to do that. And that's how I come to sound like I do today. Because I ran into the back of a car, station wagon, unbeknownst to me. The driver, 9:30 in the morning, was drunk. And he overshot his driveway. And I, because I'm high, before I left the house, I'm high. That's what I like to do. Did I mention that? I pick my head down, and I'm humping it, humping it. Before Lance Armstrong, he's a wuss. All right. The people I grew up with and admired, these were straight from the Amazon. There was no steroids. So I'm humping it. Had a lot of distance. And then when I pick my head up to see where he's at, he is right here. And I am right here. And then over 8 surgeries later, ta-da! And I got high before each and every surgery. What the fuck is wrong with me? I like to do it. I found, because they prep you, right? In the hospital, so you're going to have a procedure, they prep you. Oh, I'm a smart guy. So once I figured that out, nurse comes in, "You nervous, Richard?" No, I'm lying. I didn't consider myself, when I was out there for 38 years, a liar, but I lied. Did I cheat? I cheated. Did I run through friends and women like a emotional vampire? I did. So I would run in place after I got my little pre-op tranquilizer. For about 30 seconds, real fast, get that heart pumping. I'd be so fucked up. I apologize. Yeah, I'm like, I gotta be honest, right? Did not care. Why? Because I'm still alive. I've got a tracheotomy for 4 years. I'm riding my bike. Why? Because life is not going to grab me like it grabbed my father. Life is not going to do me like Mr. Ronald Lee did me for those 2 years. And he was a local legend with the parents, by the way, this mofo. But they didn't know. And when I tried to gather some of my friends to bring this man to the light of day, I didn't want money, you know. And I can understand how people want reparations. They want something. They want something, you know, pound of flesh. I get that. I didn't want that. None of my friends would back me up. So I couldn't do anything. And I learned, it took me a long time. Fourth or fifth step, it took me about 5 years. A couple of sponsors. You know, I came in the rooms. I was a mess. And I was lucky because, in a weird way, my body shut me down for a split second. Just long enough for me not to actually kill myself. And if that's not a wake-up call for this goofy boy, I don't know what is. But I had a hard time. I had a hard time with 4 and 5. Because when I tried AA the first time, that's all I did, is I tried it. I picked up my green chip. Oh, I was a happy camper. And my family were happy, too. My sponsor was happy. And when I hugged him, "See you, man. Yeah. You're doing so great. I'm so proud of you. You know, don't wait. You call me. I got you, bro." What he didn't know was I was kissing him goodbye. And it took me, 12 years. I didn't kill myself. And I came back. I had to do this thing. So now it's 4 and 5. 1, 2, and 3. There's no question. Ready, willing, able. A power greater than myself? Yeah, you're looking at it. Give it up. I'll I'll give you a body part if I have to. And no, I didn't understand that. I tried, and I just kept coming back. I had to know. Is this something that I'm going to miss again? Am I going to finagle and BS my way around this too? I couldn't. Why? Because I had a little taste of it. A little taste of it. But I didn't stay long enough. For the miracle, whatever. You know, I just didn't stay. I thought, all right, I know what to do. I know what not to do. And I was good. For 7 of those 11 or 12 years. And then I went all to shit. All right, so what did I say? Fuck shit. All right, that's it. So now the onion is getting peeled. 4 and 5, 4 and 5. And I'm not a happy camper, because I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back there. I do not. Why? What's this got to do with me never picking up a drink again? Very stubborn. Just like my whole life after we got home from the beach. I had to do it my way. But, for the grace of God of my understanding, the people in this room and the kindness, you know, that term, the kindness of strangers, I'm talking about my sponsors, plural. Maybe you need to find somebody, Richard. You're fighting. I'm trying to help you understand. You know, you don't have to fight. I said, I surrender, goddammit, but I don't. And then I would stop. And then finally, a man said to me, listen, there's only so much AA can do for someone like me. And I love it when we say, for how it works, those with grave emotional and mental disorders, or whatever that word is, that's me. I can be fixed. Humpty Dumpty can be put back together again. And it doesn't have to be the way I want it to be. It can't. It can't be the way I want it to be. But that's okay too. And that's all I did. I just kept coming back. It started to make sense here, here, and here. And the spirit I had as a child with my mother, father, and brother, that I thought, I just thought it was gone. I wasn't close to a human being. I was getting up every morning. I was going to work. I always made sure I got to work early. Gotta make the boss look good. He looks good, I look good. I had a woman, 10 years younger than me. She had all the juice. I remember when I was 20, and I'm not talking about sexual juice, although she had that too. I mean, she was alive. She was alive. You know, she's 4 years old. I'm worse than a zombie, because I'm not even getting paid in a TV series, The Walking Dead. But I had to go through what I had to go through. And I didn't like that phrase. All right? When I first heard it, for a long time. But what did I do? I kept coming back. I ran out. I ran out of me. I wanted me back. Not better, just me. 6 years old? Yeah, I'll take that. I'll take that little kid over what I was. And I talk about that to people, you know. I mean, I want to, don't get me wrong, my child is, you can't go back. But that spirit, you know, we weren't super religious. These were old school, they were superstitious in their own way. And tradition meant a lot. Ritual meant a lot. And I was all in when I was in choir and those first few years of grade school. But that got twisted. Of course it didn't. But now it's and I, yeah, I stayed long enough to find me, and I'm still finding me, you know. There's a lot of things I don't understand in this world, and I spent a lifetime reading, studying, trying to figure it out why am I here? Why? My mom, she passed away when I was sober. She got to see that. Fuck. You don't know the shit I put this woman through. She was so happy. So happy. And I just kept coming back, because the more I did, and it wasn't just that I was feeling better. That's important. Don't get me wrong. We need some comfort, right? We need some comfort. We've had enough with the pain. But the pain's gonna come. I'm not meant to be out there to be high all day long. We're not meant to be happy all day long. This I've learned. I'm meant to feel joy and sorrow, happiness and grief. This is what humanity is. And if you're struggling with that, I feel you. These days, when I see young people, the crap they gotta work their way through, if they can, oh, I don't think I would have made it if I was a teenager these days. But that's the world. It's always been that way. I'm the one that had to change. Yeah, anyway. I'm so happy some of my good friends are here. And they know I can hijack this thing for another 3 hours. And I still wouldn't be finished. So I'm not going to do that. I can't tell you. I will leave you with this. The first meeting, the second time around, my second lightship, was in this room 18 years ago. 8 o'clock, speaker meeting. Now, call it what you want, circle of life, you know, what goes around comes around. I don't care what you think. I know, and that's all I need. Oh, thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Richard. And Richard. Très bien. Merci beaucoup. Now we'll ask Lisa to come up and hand out the chips.
My name is Lisa and I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Great job, Richard. I'm so proud of you, my friend. Okay, here at the Blue Chip Speaker Meeting, we offer chips to show your time away from a drink. Anybody want to pick up a white chip tonight? All right.
ain't never going back. Only thing I own in a paper sack. I'm all alone, and I've lost them day and night. I need someone's hand carry me when I'm tired. I got to go. I can't stay here no more. That mean old bartender just showed me the door. Somewhere, somehow, I'll win my fight someday, and we'll all be together on that broad highway.
We'll all be together on that broad highway.